As Christians, we can look at this topic in a much different way than the world tends to look at it. We tend to shy away from this topic. Maybe it's because it involves facing our mortality, facing our death, thinking about the time when we leave this earth and we leave everything behind and everything changes. And for a lot of people, that's scary and that's just terrifying. And so it's not surprising that over half of the population has no estate plan whatsoever. Included in that is attorneys who could write up their own estate plan, who could draft their own will, but even they don't have, many of them, wills in place either. And for those that do, many of you do, when's the last time you updated it? When's the last time you took a look at it and said, is this doing what I had hoped it would do? So let's talk about this very important and wonderful topic, estate planning for the Christian. And just to make sure we're on the same page, we're talking about wills and trust and other related documents that provide instructions and say, what do you want to happen to your property at the time you graduate and pass into the next life? So the very beginning of this presentation is probably the most important. We're going to talk about some key principles, which you're going to say, okay, that's familiar, but we're going to talk about implementing them in a practical way into our lives. It's going to change the way we look at estate planning and really about our finances and material possessions in general. Estate planning is a spiritual exercise, or at least it should be for us as believers. The principle that changes everything is ownership. I'm going to look at some verses that you've heard before, you're familiar with them, but let's talk about them anyway. Psalm 24:1, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. Almighty God created everything that we see, and everyone who has ever lived on this planet. God created it, God owns it, He orchestrates it. He is Almighty God, the Lord of the universe. So what does that look like in a practical sense? You might say, yes, I understand God is the owner, but then subconsciously we think to ourselves, well, I built a business, or I landed a job, and I work hard 40, 50, 60 hours a week, and I bring home a paycheck. That's my paycheck. There's an interesting passage in Deuteronomy chapter 8 where God says, you may say to yourself, my power and the strength of my hands have produced this wealth for me. But remember the Lord your God, for it is He who gives you the ability to produce wealth. So even that paycheck that we earn, we're participating in God's providence in order to make that happen. But without God, it wouldn't happen. He owns it all. He's the gracious God who places it in our hands. James chapter 1:17, every good and perfect gift is from above. So every resource that we have, it has come from God and it belongs to God. I love this passage in 1 Chronicles 29 where David celebrates with the nation of Israel following a fundraising event in which Israel came together to contribute resources for the building of God's temple. David, who led in this endeavor, was blown away because he realized it was God that made it happen. What are some of the things he says in this prayer of thanks for the temple resources? David says to God, everything in heaven and earth is yours. He acknowledged God's ownership. Wealth and honor come from you. And then he says, as we're participating in this process of giving back to you, who am I and who are my people that we should be able to give as generously as this? Everything comes from you. We have given you only what comes from your hand. Lord, our God, all this abundance that we have provided for building you a temple for your holy name comes from your hand and all of it belongs to you. Now, if we really understood that concept the way David understood it, we would look at finances in an entirely different light. And we would look at estate planning in a different way as well. Because if we understand God as the owner, what does that make us? It makes us stewards, which is another word for a manager, which has been entrusted with resources that belong to somebody else. A number of years ago, a friend of mine at church asked to borrow our car. And I gladly loaned him the car. He had the car for about 3 or 4 days and brought it back to me. And here's what surprised me. Brought it back in good shape, no dents, no scratches. The tank was filled up. That wasn't a big surprise. That was a very nice gesture. He had washed the car. He had detailed the car. And he also found some mechanical issues that he was able to go in and fix. And so not only did he give the car back in the same shape that he received it, but even better than he received it. Now, why do you think he did that? He was showing respect for the fact that this was our vehicle. It wasn't his. And so in honor of the owner, at least from a human standpoint, he was trying to treat that asset, that vehicle, with as much respect as possible. And if we understand God's ownership and our role as stewards in relationship to God, then we will treat his resources that he has entrusted into our hands with the same respect. So when it comes to estate planning is very simply this. We as stewards have the opportunity and the responsibility to engage with God during our lifetime in our financial lives to manage his resources in a way that meets his agenda. That includes, yes, meeting our own personal needs, because that's one of the reasons God gives us his resources. Meeting the needs of the dependents he has placed in our lives, family and other loved ones, and giving to other people and organizations and ministries that are carrying out his agenda. But there will come a day when the final chapter of this earthly existence will come to an end, and we will graduate into our next existence, to our heavenly home. And when that happens, our estate plan, our wills or trusts, the documents that explain what our wishes are, will represent our very last act of stewardship on this planet. And so it's very important, because we don't know when that day will come, to have in place a plan that honors the owner in that process. So let's begin with that foundation of God's ownership and understand that because we know God owns it, everything in our financial world becomes a spiritual issue. It becomes a way to engage with God. And we can walk with God in this area of our lives that I once thought of as being largely neutral from a spiritual standpoint, other than a few principles that said, all right, here's something you should do with your finances and avoid debt, and you should save and you should give and things like that. Everything becomes a spiritual issue. So that's the foundation we're going to begin with. When it comes to estate planning, what are some questions to consider? And I should tell the guys in the back, if you start the clock for me, which you have it, that'll ensure that we get done on time. or I'll be here till 5. We don't want that. One question to consider is, why has God given me what he has? God has not given us all the same things, the same resources, the same amounts. You read in Matthew 25, the parable of the servants, the parable of the, we call it the parable of the talents, but it's really the parable of the stewards. He chose different amounts of his resources to entrust to different people. Why has he given to each of us what he has? How does he want me to use it? Because if I'm not the owner, then it's not totally up to me. Have we even consulted God in the process of asking him, what do you want me to do with it now and at the time of my death? Another question is, how much is enough? My mom years ago made a cross stitch that later on my sister inherited and was hanging in the on the wall of her kitchen. And it's a lady working over a stove and has a very simple saying, you might have heard it. It says, enough is as good as a feast. All we need is enough, right? More than enough, well, that's more than enough. So most of us have more than enough. And a good question to ask is, why has God given us more than enough? And how much is enough for me? How much is enough for my children? Why has God given me more? So working through these issues and planning from a stewardship point of view is a way to engage with God and honor him as the owner. 1 Corinthians 4:2, it's required of stewards that a man be found faithful. And the ultimate reward that we can receive is the well done, good and faithful servant that we read about in Matthew 25. So let me challenge you, when you do your estate planning, make it a spiritual exercise. Invite God into the process. Consider his agenda. Make it about him. Let's look at some practical issues. What are some reasons to plan our estate? In addition to the fact, the big reason is it belongs to God, and I have a responsibility to God. What are some practical reasons? If you don't plan, there will be unnecessary costs in transferring your belongings to your family. Some of the distributions that take place will not coincide with your wishes. There will be complexity and red tape, which your family will have to go through. There may be family conflicts that could be avoided. If you're young, or I should say if you have young children, and they're not yet at the age of majority, then if you have not chosen a guardian for your children, the state will choose that guardian for you. So that's huge. That was the motivation, actually, for our very first estate plan. And most of all, there will be missed opportunities to honor the owner in that planning process. If you do plan, the ultimate goal is greater efficiency. Your wishes, as you pray and ask God for wisdom and what he would have you to do, there's a greater chance those wishes will be honored. It will simplify things for your family. It will lend towards harmony if you plan with your people in mind. It will allow you to choose the guardian that you think makes the most sense for your young children. And there are the rewards of wise stewardship. Well done, good and faithful servant. So let's look at the estate design process. What is involved in the process? What does it look like? How does it work? The first step that we ought to take as Christians is to set priorities. You know, if you were to ask most people, what is the objective in estate planning? If you were to ask most professional advisors, what is the goal here? What are we trying to do? You would hear something like this. Our goal is to help you get your stuff to your family as quickly as possible with the least amount of cost, complexity, and delay. That's a pretty good goal. That's a transactional goal. But I would submit that there are two other priorities for us as Christians that should precede the mere transactional aspect of estate planning. And that is, number one, honoring God by seeking out what we believe to be God's plan of stewardship for our estate. Now, that's God's plan of stewardship as you understand it in consulting with God. Nobody else can tell you what that is. There are principles that can guide you, but that's between you and God. Secondly, the stuff, if you will, the resources are temporal. At one point in time, eventually, they'll be gone. Peter tells us of a day when the earth will be consumed with fire, and it will all be destroyed. So yes, these temporal resources have benefits for a limited period of time, but the way to take temporal resources and turn them into eternal treasure is by investing them in something that is eternal. And there's one thing on this planet that's eternal, and that's, as you look around, the eternal souls that will go on living when all else has been destroyed. So I believe God's desire in making internal investments is to decide not just, the goal is not just to transfer money and assets to the next generation, but the question is, what do you want to accomplish? Yes, we want to give to certain people and certain organizations, but why? Is it to make an impact? Because that ultimately is what the resources are for. Money is not an end in itself. It's what you can do with money that gives it value. And caring for your loved ones is included in that. As you think about, some of you have children, some of you have grandchildren, you may have other loved ones that obviously you want to include in your plans. Think about not just how much you want to give to them, but think about what you would like to accomplish in their lives through that gift and the way in which that giving might help to do that. Because sometimes money itself can have an adverse effect. and create negative consequences that you never even dreamed of. But giving it in the correct way may help to create better outcomes. So our priorities as Christians, number one, honor God. Secondly, care for our loved ones. Think about the people that will be impacted through these resources. And then third, yes, that goal we just talked about is important. Address the technical, the efficiency of the transfer of those assets to the next generation. Then we also talk about legal terms, basic tax rules, and tools that are available. We're going to go through a quick overview of some things today. You all found the notes. You will notice there's a lot of material in the notes. Understand that I'm not going to cover all of them today. I included them there, so some of these you'll be able to refer to at home afterwards, but we'll touch lightly on some of them. Gather the necessary data. Part of this is collecting information for the planning process and then seeking competent counsel. So let's look first of all at the issue of probate. Some of the things that you'll be looking at when you work on your estate plan is this thing called probate. And we've all heard this word and we think, ooh, that's something we want to avoid. And we kind of sort of do, if possible. It's not the most evil thing out there, but let's first of all talk about what it is. Probate is very simply the process by which the local courts get involved in overseeing the distribution of your assets. So somebody cannot just walk into your house and say, so-and-so is dead, I'm taking this, it's mine now. There's a legal oversight to that process, and that's what probate is. And so anything that you own in your name alone will be subject to the probate process unless you've taken certain steps to plan for that. There are usually additional costs that are involved in settling your estate, figure about 3-5% of the overall value of your estate. But some of the ways that you might consider planning for the avoidance of probate would be, number one, joint titling of assets. I would advise caution. If you put somebody else as a joint owner on an asset, that exposes you and that asset to the liability that could come by way of lawsuits, bankruptcy, divorce, anything else that might happen to that person. Beneficiary designations, life insurance, retirement plan assets, assets of that nature pass free of probate, and so they're already bypassing the process. If you have bank accounts or brokerage accounts, you can set up a payable on death account, and it's like naming a beneficiary for those accounts. That would avoid probate. A transfer on death deed would apply to your home, so you can do the same thing with transferring your home at the time of death through a transfer on death deed. There are also various trusts that you might consider setting up during your lifetime that would bypass probate after your death. But there is a tool that is designed specifically for avoiding probate, and that's a tool called a revocable living trust. And by setting up a revocable living trust and allowing that trust to own your assets for you, it will accomplish what a will would accomplish by implementing the same instructions, but that trust continues living after you've died. And so because of that, the probate courts don't need to get involved, and they're fine with the idea that, okay, now you've got this trust continuing to carry out its objectives and a successor trustee stepping in. Choosing representatives, when thinking through the planning process, you would want to choose a personal representative, somebody basically to act as your executor, perhaps a trustee of any trust that you might set up, for example, for minor children, guardians for minor children, and durable powers of attorney for disability issues, overseeing property, helping to manage property, and dealing with health care issues. So that's part of the decision-making process, too. Some of the vehicles that you might look at include trust for minor children. You can see a few reasons why that might be wise to consider there if you do have minor children. And a document that's not often discussed but is a very important document is something called a letter of instructions. This is the part of your plan that the attorney does not write for you. It's something you can write, and you can even update it on a regular basis. All the attorney needs to do is reference it in your legal documents. And in this document, the letter of instructions, you can communicate things such as personal wishes regarding the distributions of your personal effects, Making sure that this particular asset, which all the children want because it has sentimental value, if you're deciding where that goes, it might help to avoid some squabbles after you're gone. Important information such as passwords, usernames, important document locations. You can include your Christian testimony. And that's very important, too. Personal messages and wishes regarding a memorial service and things of that nature. So that's another item you might consider. Now let's talk about some of the other costs. We talked about probate being a potential cost in the estate planning process. There are also two types of taxes that are worth looking at. One is called the estate tax, and the other is an IRD tax, which stands for income in respect of a decedent. Now, we're going to go over the estate tax first, and I will acknowledge the fact that the estate tax is not going to apply to most of us in this room, at least not at this point, and you'll see why in a minute, but it wouldn't surprise me if there are a few of you in this room that need to hear this information, because what's interesting is this: estate taxes are optional. I'm not saying we're cheating the IRS out of what belongs to them, but the IRS has provided legitimate ways that on an estate of any size, doesn't matter how large your estate is, you can plan accordingly so that you can zero out any and all estate tax liability. And then we'll come to the IRD tax, which is probably going to hit most of us in this room. The estate tax and gift tax rules, let's take a quick look at that. The estate tax is a tax on your right to give away property at the time of your death. I know that sounds a little odd to say, we're taxed on the right to give something, but that's exactly what it is. Tied in with this this law and the rules around it is the gift tax rules, and that's very simply a tax on your right to give away property or money during your lifetime. So yes, if you give away too much money to another person, while you're still living, there could be a gift tax issue to deal with. So how does that work? The estate tax rates, they have a top rate of 40%, so it is a tax that you really want to look at. And we have an exclusion or an exemption amount that says the first $12.06 million of your estate can be transferred without any estate tax issue. So you're thinking, I don't have to worry about that because our estate isn't close to that. One thing to keep in mind is on December 31st, 2025, the $12 million exemption, which is being adjusted for inflation, will resort to the prior amount, or Congress will meet and decide a lower amount. So it could come down to $5 million, $3.5 million, we're not sure yet. So if you're thinking this doesn't apply to me at this point, maybe it doesn't, but it could within a few years, depending on what the IRS does, what Congress does. Annual gift exclusion is $16,000. That means you can give any one person up to $16,000 a year without any estate tax issue. If you exceed that, then it would dig into that. It would fall under that $12 million exemption. So how do you plan for this? If that's an issue that might affect you now or in the future, what are some ways to reduce or avoid the estate tax? One is give away during your lifetime what you won't need. Spending down your estate will help to shrink the size of the taxable estate at the time of your death. So we talked about that question. How much is enough? Why has God given me more than enough? And why am I sitting on all of it until the day I die? Some people have thought through that question and have decided, well, we can do more of our giving during our lifetime and get to enjoy seeing our family use that and our ministries use that and the work of God promoted. And so it also reduces the estate tax liability. If you own life insurance, remove the ownership from your name because the life insurance face amount is included in that calculation unless you don't own the policy. A very common way to set that up is to create a trust called an irrevocable life insurance trust that can own the life insurance for you. But that's a very easy and quick fix if you have life insurance owned in your name. A credit shelter trust is something that can be set up to receive some of the assets at the time of your death. It's to help ensure, well, how do I explain this quickly and easily? There is a portability feature that says, and it didn't used to be there, that says husbands and wives each get an exemption amount. But if the person who died first puts the money in a credit shelter trust, then any growth of those funds during the second spouse's life would be protected from estate taxes too. That gets a little more complicated, but it's something to consider. Family limited partnerships or LLCs can help reduce the size of an estate, but there are some issues there where the Congress is looking closely at that, and it might not be the best way to go. Making charitable donations from your estate. For some people whose estate value is over the exemption amount, if they're charitably inclined, and a lot of people we work with are, they'll say, well, let's just give to charity anything above that amount, and that will take care of that tax liability. And it does, because that's a deduction against the estate and the estate tax. For those who say, well, we want to give to charity, but we also want to make sure there's enough for the children. We want to maximize our resources for both family and ministry. You can utilize a give it twice trust for your retirement assets. And we'll get to that in a minute when we talk about the retirement assets, the IRD taxes. A seventh way is a charitable lead trust, and this is the tool that says it doesn't matter how large your estate is, an estate of any size can utilize a charitable lead trust and zero out the estate taxes. Again, if you want to maximize what goes to family and to, what goes to your family. So a charitable lead trust is a trust that would receive any potentially taxable amounts at the time of death, and instead of that going immediately to family members, it would pay an income stream over a period of time to one or more nonprofits, charitable organizations, and if the payment period and the percentage payout are correct, you can use different formulas for figuring that out, it might be, I'm going to pull out some numbers, 12% for 12 years. 10% for 16 years, something like that, would zero out the estate tax so that at the end of that period of time, anything remaining in that trust could go to family and no estate tax. So you would just be delaying the gifts to family, using those potentially taxable assets to kick off income to your charities and ministries. You can also consider charitable gifts with lifetime benefits. This comes under the same category of giving it away while you die. There are different ways to do your charitable giving, which would also help with that reduction of taxable estates. Charitable gift annuities would do that for you. It's a way of saying, Dallas Seminary Foundation, here's a chunk of money. We agree to pay you an income for as long as you and your spouse are living, if it's a married couple. And at the end of that period of time, whatever is left in there becomes a gift. Assets removed from your estate. You've combined your income needs with tax planning needs and your charitable giving desires. A charitable remainder trust is a nice tool to use for appreciated assets like the sale of real estate. If you want to avoid the capital gains tax on the sale of that asset, you can donate it to a charitable remainder trust, have the trust sell it, pay you income for life. The remainder is paid to one or more charitable organizations that you've named to receive that. You can create a life estate agreement. I've talked to some people who've said, whether it's our personal residence, a vacation home, some other real estate that we own, we would like to give this to our ministries at the time of our death, but we kind of sort of need it now. So if it's a personal residence, you're going to need to live there while you're living, probably. And so you can give the asset now, but reserve the right to live in your personal residence as long as you're still living. And then at the time of your death, it is already given, avoids estate taxes, avoids probate, and you even get an income tax deduction at the time you make the gift, even though it's years before the charity actually receives full ownership of it. It would be a reduced amount because the gift comes later, but you would still get an income tax deduction during your lifetime for a gift that's made after your death. And any of these gift ideas that we're talking about here, you don't have to have an estate tax to motivate you to consider these things, but it also helps with the estate tax. Okay, Let's shift gears now. Some of you are thinking, all right, none of this applies to me, and it will never apply to me. But let's talk about a tax that most people overlook, and it probably applies to just about everyone in this room. It's called the IRD tax. It refers to income in respect to a decedent, and it's very simply income taxes that are attached to certain assets that you have, that when we give them away at the time of our death, that income tax liability follows along with that asset. So there are a few different categories of assets to which that would apply, but the primary one is any qualified retirement plan, such as a traditional IRA, 401k, and that sort of thing. So you know that if you've got an IRA or if you've been socking away money in a 401k during your lifetime, you know there's coming a point where, all right, we got the tax deduction now, we've got tax deferred growth on this, but there will come a day that we have to pull money out, and when we do, 100% taxable. What do you think happens when you give that IRA to the children when you die? Does that tax go away? It's not tax-free, it's tax deferred, and that tax liability goes along with the asset. So if you give your IRA to your children, they're going to carry that tax liability with them, and they will be paying income taxes at their tax rate when they pull that money out. What often happens is, I know it shouldn't, there are other ways to plan this, but most children that inherit an IRA take the money in a lump sum, and what that does is it maximizes the tax liability, probably or potentially pushing them into the highest tax bracket. And so what happens is you've got a federal income tax, and we're not even using the highest rate here, 32%. We'll use an average for the state income tax, because that would apply too, of 5%. That would leave less than two-thirds of that asset remaining. So the IRA that you just left your children, you worked a lifetime to set aside, you worked for it, you invested it, you managed it, and a third of it is gone. But you're thinking, well, we want the children to have something. Can we still give the children generous amounts and do something about this tax? There are ways to avoid the IRD tax. One is, again, this is just being comprehensive, you can give away from your IRA during your lifetime using the qualified charitable distribution rules. That says that as soon as you reach age 70 and a half, you can make direct transfers from your IRA to your charities, to your nonprofits, and there's no tax liability. Typically, any monies coming out of an IRA, you would have to pay income taxes on that, but this is one way where you have no tax liability at all. You might say, well, I get the income tax deduction when I donate it. Maybe you do, unless you're one of the 70% or more who take the standard deduction and don't itemize. And so the qualified charitable deduction can be a very tax-efficient way to do your charitable giving once you've reached age 70 and a half. And age 72 is when you're required to take your required minimum distributions. Any gifts made to charity from that qualified charitable distribution can work towards meeting that required the required minimum. So anything you give away to spend that down during your lifetime would obviously help, but that might not be your primary choice. The other thing you can do is, if you want to include, or if you're considering, DTS or any worthwhile ministry, any nonprofit, your local church, other ministries that God has laid on your heart, if you're planning on giving to those organizations, guess what happens when you give your IRA to DTS? Zero tax. We're a nonprofit. We don't have to pay the income taxes on that, or the IRD tax in this case. So if you just shift around what you give to the children and give them non-taxable assets, and give the taxable assets to your ministries, you're sparing them from that tax liability. So what if you're saying, that makes a whole lot of sense, but a large majority of our estate is tied up in that, in those IRAs, in those qualified plans. We don't have a whole lot else besides that, so that's a big chunk of our estate. So giving that all to charity might not allow us to give as much as we had hoped to give to the children. So we've got a concept called a give-it-twice trust that might help with that issue. A give-it-twice trust works like this. It involves the creation of a trust prior to your death. This is actually a charitable remainder trust that we're talking about, that would receive the asset, would receive your IRA proceeds. If there is a surviving spouse, you can use this charitable trust. You could roll over the IRA for your spouse so that he or she can use that during their lifetime. Same rules apply, taxable withdrawals. But at the second death, the proceeds would go into a charitable trust. This trust can pay out income for a period of time to your family members. The charitable lead trust that we talked about before pays income to charity for a period of time and the remainder to the family. This kind of switches those two around, where this pays income to your family for a period of time, the remainder goes to charity. So a lot of people like the idea of saying, all right, if we gave it outright to the children, we're probably looking at about a third of that disappearing right away. What if we put it in this trust and pay 10% a year over a period of 10 years? They're getting, in essence, 100% of the value just spread out over time. And if those assets are earning 10% a year or close to it, then we have about the same amount of money in the trust that we started with that we can give to our ministries. So not only does this help reduce the tax liability, but it may help the children with the fact that you're spreading it out instead of they're getting it in their laps all at one time. And statistics say that when any of us gets a lump sum all at one time, there's a huge temptation to spend it quickly. So this might help it to last a little bit longer. So we talked about some concepts, maybe spent a little more time on some of them, but they're good to know. Some of these might apply to you, some may not. But just, again, becoming familiar with some tools, some basic concepts, some language, all in the context of being wise stewards with God's resources. So where do I go from here? What does the process look like? The first step in the process is to make an inventory, to get out a piece of paper and to write down, who are the people that God has placed in my life that I want to consider giving to? If you have children, they're probably going to end up on that list. Grandchildren the same way. Any other loved ones, maybe elderly parents that you're still caring for, make a list of those. What about our ministries? Our ministries are people too, who carry out God's work and minister in turn to other people for the glory of God and to carry out the Great Commission. So if you're supporting ministries now and that's important to you, ask yourself, is that something I want to continue when I die? Might that be part of God's plan of stewardship for me? So make your list of people. Then take an inventory of your property. What do you own? What's the approximate value? This type of planning doesn't mean you've got to get it down to the penny, but approximate values. Categorize it based on real estate, bank accounts, brokerage accounts, qualified retirement plans, because each type of property is treated a little bit differently in the estate transfer process. And then ask yourself, what are our plans? What do we want to accomplish? This is the most challenging part of the process, just deciding, God, what would you have us do with it? Well, one of my mentors, Ray Line, explained a very effective process for making this a little bit easier. He said, imagine cash on the table. We don't know when we're going to die. We don't know if we're going to make it till tomorrow. So what if we did this? What if we took all this property that we just inventoried and add up the value and to say, okay, if we graduate today, if God takes us home today, let's say tomorrow, and we had to give it all away today, what amount of cash would that look like on the table? Because eventually it's going to be converted to cash. Imagine the cash on your table. And then if God said to you, you have to give it away today, you have to, because tomorrow you'll be gone. It'll be too late. How would you give it away? Now, hopefully you won't be gone tomorrow. We want you to stay around a long time. But plan as if this was your last opportunity. And then start thinking through, what would we want to give to this person and that person and this organization? What would that look like? What would the dollar amounts look like? How does that translate into percentages of our overall estate? And obviously you want to pray about this, because James chapter 1 says, if any of us lacks wisdom, and we do, we should pray and ask for wisdom, and God will give us that wisdom. So if God owns it, then surely, out of courtesy, if nothing else, we should begin by asking him, God, what do you want us to do with it? And what kind of impact might we be able to make in the lives of our children, in the lives of our family, our loved ones, in the communities, and in the world that we leave behind? And then you've got your professional advisors. Good sermon there. It's alliterated. You've got four P's. Your professional advisors are your planning team. That would certainly involve a qualified estate planning attorney, maybe your wealth advisor, your CPA. We would encourage you to consider having a plan giving specialist as part of that team. That's who we are. We have a different area of focus. Each of those professional advisors has a different area of focus than the next. The strengths that we bring to the process include a couple of areas. One is, as we're talking about today, showing you practical ways to make it a spiritual exercise. And then for those who are charitably inclined, not everybody is, but for those who say, giving to ministry, to us, is not a cost, it's an investment. And if you value that, then you're in a separate category than other people. And there are special types of planning ideas and strategies that would work for you that you need to hear about, some of which we talked about today. So the plan giving specialist will help to ensure that you've considered all of your options and all of your opportunities so that at the end of the day, you can make more informed decisions. Consider the legacy you would like to leave. Again, as Christians, it's not just about transferring the assets. It's not purely transactional. It should be about, what's the difference that we want to make in the world that we leave behind? What do you believe in? What do you stand for? What are you passionate about? Are you spreading that to your family? Are you spreading that to others? Are you living in a way that exemplifies that? And will you be dying in a way that demonstrates that? How can our estate plan communicate that? What are some of the values you would like to communicate through your plan? How might you wish to involve others in carrying out those values? And then again, the impact. How do you hope to impact others for good in the near term as well as in the long term? We talked about this already. It shouldn't be step three. It should be step one, pre-one. Ask God for wisdom, and he will give it to us. And then use the cash on the table exercise that might help with that planning. Assemble your team of advisors. We talked about that. Proverbs 15:22 says this is a good idea. Your planning team can help. What can we, as ministers of the Dallas Seminary Foundation, do to help you? Here's some of the specific ways that we can do that. We can answer questions and provide additional insight. We can supply you with an estate inventory. If you're saying, I like that idea of recording the people that we want to remember, our property, our plans, and our planners, we have a workbook that you can get from us that we can provide for that. If you don't have an attorney or other advisors that you feel would be helpful in the process, we're getting to know people on a regular basis that are good quality people that we can help direct you to if needed. We can educate you regarding your planning options and opportunities. We can help you with recommended language. If you say, we love DTS, we're hearing about this mission, and we see after 98 years of God's grace and faithfulness, there's still a strong future moving forward. We want to be part of that. How do I include Dallas Theological Seminary? What's the recommended language? What is your tax ID number? How should that be included? And do we want to designate that in some way? We can help with that. Why does all of this matter? You see pictures of three gentlemen on the screen. Brian Carter, whom we heard from this morning. Grant Patrick, you'll hear from Grant tomorrow? Tonight. Met Grant in the hallway. And Mark Hitchcock, you'll hear from as well this weekend. What do these three have in common besides they're here this weekend? They're products of DTS. Guess who else is this guy over here? Some of the people, other people you've heard from, John Dyer, Michael Ortiz. You know what DTS is about. You know what this one organization is passionate about doing. It's about training men and women to carry out God's work in a way that turns the world upside down. So whether it's Dallas Theological Seminary or what you can do in and through your family or what you can do in the world that you leave behind with God's guidance, it's not about just transferring money. It's about the impact that you can make with the resources that God places in your hands. God is writing a story in the lives of each one of us. You know what's an interesting element of any good story? My favorite stories, whether it's a book that I'm reading or a movie that I'm watching on TV or at the movie theater, it's when it's got a good ending. When you've got that surprise ending or it's a mystery and everything comes together at the end, it's like, oh, what an amazing way to end this story. You get to that climax and it's just, the whole movie could have been, where's this going? Or it's convoluted or complex or a little confusing. And then it gets to the end and it all comes together and bam. This story is great because in part it had a really great ending. So every day that you live, you're writing your story. And there will come a last day. We might not know when that is, but there will come a last day on this earth where we graduate to the next life. And guess what? You have the chance to be part of writing that amazing ending that we'll call an estate plan. That will be your last act as a steward on this planet and will determine what did I do, what did we do with the valuable resources that God has entrusted to us, and how have we helped to carry out God's plan for His glory. Heavenly Father, we ask you to give us wisdom. We thank you for entrusting us with such a great responsibility and an opportunity to engage in with you in something that you could do all on your own, but you've allowed us to be a part of it. Help us to know how to use your precious resources to take care of our personal needs, our family needs, to care for our loved ones, and to make a difference in this world that is in such desperate need of Jesus Christ. And when we meet you, and when it comes to the stewardship that we've exercised in this life, we ask that we would be worthy of those words, well done, good and faithful servant. We ask this in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen. Quick thing. Dana, would you stand up? I will be here this weekend. Dana is in the back. She's a member of our team as well. If you'd like to talk, the last page has my cell phone number on it. That's a good way you can text me. You can grab Dana, grab me, or we can connect afterwards. We would love to serve you.